6-1-3 Wrestling. With your hosts, Kyle Joseph and Mark Cote.
Hey everyone, I'm Kyle.
And my name's Mark.
And you're listening to 613 Wrestling Podcast, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
All over the place.
All everywhere. So we were having some technical difficulties with our podcast machine, which I guess is the the price you pay for free. So we're jerry-rigging a method so that everyone can hear Mark and hear me, and so I may be a little louder than Mark, but I'll try not to drown him out with my heavy breathing.
Don't breathe too much into the mic. Then we'll be fine.
All right. So today we wanted to break down the weekend that was. So we have NXT TakeOver Tirana 2, which took place on Saturday, the 12th,
13th,
whatever day it was. And then we have SummerSlam on Sunday, which was the big event. And then we'll kind of just talk about anything that from SummerSlam that impacted Raw and SmackDown this week. But we did want to focus on SummerSlam and TakeOver. And then we're going to close it out with any other wrestling discussion we want to have. And as well, we'll preview the upcoming charity Fighting Back 9, which is C4's charity show coming up tomorrow, the 16th of August, for the sold-out show. But we will get to that later. All right. Yep, I am going to for sure. And then next week, I'll be able to recap how it went.
Yeah, we'll do a little segment. I'll ask you some questions about how it went, and you can give us that whole experience.
Sounds good. All right, so up first, we had NXT TakeOver Toronto, which was, I think, another successful TakeOver. I don't think that you can say that it shocked you of how good it was, because the expectation is greater.
No, that's really true.
So there was a couple of matches before the show, but those matches were specific to future episodes of NXT, so we will let those be. And we will get into the first match of the night, which was the Street Profits retaining their title over the Undisputed Era's Kyle O'Reilly and Bobby Fish. It was interesting leading into this one as to whether they were going to give the Undisputed Era all the belts. Obviously, they did not. That's okay. So, Mark, what did you think of this one? Because this one was, in my opinion, the best match of the night.
I would definitely say it was my top, probably tied for my top two favorite matches of the night. What I loved about this most was, number one, the Undisputed Era has created something so great, and it's something that I think most people want to create in professional wrestling, and that's the ability that regardless of wins or losses, you don't lose stock on it. So Kyle O'Reilly and Bobby Fish, representing the Undisputed Era, even though they lost and the Street Profits retained their title, number one, they lost no steam. I thought it made the Street Profits stock go very high up, because not only to defend at a big show against a very credible multi-time tag team holding team with Kyle and Bobby, but just the match they put on. It's nice to walk away and get a legitimate win against a very good team. And especially, too, we've seen the Street Profits in the back of Raw, all the segments. You saw it in SummerSlam the last several weeks. You see them interacting with legends and current stars. And if anything, having their win column and their legitimacy rise, it helps them so much more. So I was a big, big fan of this match. Inside and outside of the ring, it was fantastic. No misses. No goofs, no botches. It was clean, great. And what I liked about it, too, wasn't overly flippy. There was a lot of mat wrestling and hard wrestling in that match, and I thought it was fantastic. What about you?
So I am in agreement with Undisputed Era. The boom in part of the song and how, they hit their mark and the crowd's all into it, the Adam Cole stuff. The one thing I really like is that every single one of those members can wrestle. They're all strong wrestlers. And obviously, Adam Cole, I think they're all of equal. To be perfectly honest with you, I think they're all of equal in the ring. Adam Cole obviously has the personality, which puts him above the rest. But there was one move where it was like a... I don't even know what specifically it was, but it was kind of like a code breaker. And then he, with assistance, it was Kyle O'Reilly with assistance from Bobby Fish. And then Kyle O'Reilly kind of kicks him with his feet and it pushes him into like a suplex, a German suplex, which I thought was, you know, just really cool and very innovative. But the thing that I was surprised the most of was Montez Ford. I thought that he put on a show. He proved that he will be a star. I think he's going to really, his athleticism, his personality, because I always thought he had the personality, but I was never really into him in the ring. But just watching that match, you know, the physicality and the athleticism, I thought he really stepped it up. And I think down the road, Angelo Dawkins will fall by the wayside. He will be the Marty Jannetty to...
Shawn Michaels.
Yeah, to Montez's Shawn Michaels. I think so, just because of what Montez Ford can do and his personality. It clearly stands out. But all in all, this was my favorite match. It was a nice, good, solid tag team wrestling match, which is one of the things I appreciate. And you didn't get any interference from Roderick, and you didn't get any interference from Adam Cole, and it was good. It was exactly the way I wanted it to be.
No, 100%. And especially, too, yeah, I think when you look at the Street Profits, you know, they're two, not only they're a great team, but they are two very opposites, personality wise and everything else. And so we'll see. Hopefully, one can keep up with the other, but either which way, I think Street Profits. And for me, a year ago, I was not a Street Profits fan. I thought that they were a ripoff of, you know, like, I almost tried to, sometimes I almost thought of C4 Wrestling's tag team, The Fraternity.
Yes.
You know, kind of like a really, just the solo cops and, you know, like either which way you can argue who came first, but not the point. You know, it was just very, like, very gimmicky. But they've been able to put the work in and show that the work is way much more than the gimmick. The gimmick is fun for the fans. The work they do as a tag team is crisp and amazing. So, yeah, definitely. And plus, what a way to kick off the NXT show in general.
Yeah, so what's up next is Io Shirai defeating Candice LeRae. You know, this is one of those things where after watching the tag team, I thought, ooh, these ladies are going to be in trouble because I don't know how you're going to compete with the previous match. And that's what NXT TakeOvers are all about, right? It's how do you surpass the match before? But they put on a great match. I think that, you know, Io Shirai, there's a couple of shots she took that I was like, oh, these are really strong. And, you know, she had a great finisher, and they all put, you know, they did enough aerial to kind of separate themselves from some of the other women. And especially when Io Shirai is known for her aerial moves, I think it's important that you do showcase them if you're going to talk about them. So I definitely think, obviously, it wasn't the strongest match of the night, but that wasn't because of their effort. That was just because of the effort of the other matches.
Right, no, 100%. That match, number one, it surprised me. Because if anything, with Candice LeRae that night, you saw the independent Candice LeRae that night. You know, it was almost a hardcore match without the hardcore stipulation. You know, those two beat the hell out of each other. And it was fantastic because if you didn't know who Io Shirai was before or just thought she was another Japanese wrestler coming to NXT, you know, she's made a name for herself.
I would say that she's better than Kairi Sane.
What's that, sorry?
I would say that she's better than Kairi Sane.
Oh, hell yeah. Kairi Sane is great, and she'll always be a great addition to any roster, but she's very simple. You know, like, it's almost, she's very, like, soft in a lot of ways. She's got her big elbow drop and a lot of different things, but the gimmick, the captain, you know, walking down with the, you know, like just her whole gear and everything else. I think it kind of takes away from that, but I don't know. But, you know, Io Shirai is, man, like, those, I don't know if I've ever seen a female women's match that two went at each other that hard. You know, that was the bumps and bruises they probably felt the day after. They went all out, and I loved it.
All right, up next we had our triple threat match for the North American Championship. Velveteen Dream, surprisingly, I think, maintained his title over Pete Dunne and Roderick Strong. I thought this match was going to steal the night. It didn't for me. It wasn't bad by any stretch of the means. It's just that I didn't enjoy it as much as I enjoyed some of the other matches. I don't necessarily... Right. Triple threat matches are really hard, I think, to pull
very
off.
Very hard.
When you have three very distinct styles trying to work together, I would have probably preferred a one-on-one match with Velveteen in either one of them. I think that Pete Dunne and Roderick Strong have more of a story that they could have played better and maybe not have the triple threat. Maybe they could have had Pete Dunne come in during the middle of the match and kind of ruin it for Roderick Strong or something like that. But, you know, Velveteen Dream busting out the Canadian Open with the Mounties and whatnot. But, and then rocking the lumberjack look. So, I mean, it's definitely not the best match I've seen them in. It wasn't by any stretch a terrible match. But for me, it just didn't match up with some of the other matches on the card.
No, I would totally agree. It's definitely hard to define that match because it wasn't a bad match. And especially, too, and you said it, and I agree, triple threats are very, very hard to do. Because usually in the match, we're used to seeing, you know, one-on-one, two people, you know, to have that third be on the side. I thought they did a great use at utilizing the triple threat, where it was constantly trying to, you know, almost like ostracize the other individual, you know, by taking them out to be able to have their one-on-one to get the pin. You know, and plus two, all three of them showcased their strengths. You know, we knew Pete Dunne is a punch you in the mouth, hard, brute. You know, Velveteen Dream just has that ability to put on not just a great wrestler, but he puts on a show when he's wrestling. And Roderick Strong compliments Pete Dunne in the sense of, you know, they're both very similar, where it's a very fight attitude. But no, I thought it was great. I thought Dream retaining was the right thing to do, because I think right now in NXT, you know, Pete Dunne has his own little legacy between NXT UK, you know, being the longest reigning, you know, NXT UK champion. Roderick Strong, although he's been wrestling for a long time, I think he still has, like, a slow burn will be the success with him. Like, don't rush him. But I think Velveteen, being probably the less tenured in wrestling experience, you need to build him, strengthen him. And I think they did exactly that night. And yeah, that entrance, you know, with the Mounties turning into the dancing, turning into, you know, him wearing his own version of the, you know, the white and red Canadian colors. I thought it was a great show.
All right. Second last match of the night was the women's championship match between Shayna Baszler and Mia Yim. Shayna Baszler retaining with a submission move. I enjoyed this match. I thought that Mia Yim, she really showed up. And I think that this is the first time that Shayna Baszler has looked vulnerable enough that if she lost, people wouldn't question it. Like when she lost to Kairi Sane, it was very similar to when Ember Moon won, when it's the submission gone wrong. You know, right. they have them and they tie them up and then they can't get out of their own submission. But this one, like, there was chances that Mia Yim was going to win. And she really took it to her. And I thought this was a great match. I like the build-up. I like the fact that Mia Yim took out the two sidecars on Shayna Baszler's train or car, what do you want to call them, motorcycle, so that it was just one-on-one and could really show off. And so I was pleasantly surprised and very impressed with this match.
No, same here. And I'll be honest, it took me a little bit to get there. The first 5 minutes into the match, I was actually very unimpressed with Mia Yim, because when you watch it back, and I needed to watch it back again, and when you watch it, there was a lot of missteps, miscues, some sloppy points on Mia's side where things were very, like, she wasn't really following through with some moves. There was some little, like, and a little bit on Shayna as well, some uncoordination. But after that, I think they both needed to feel each other out.
Yeah.
Because they both have very similar styles, but also very different styles. But I'll say after, you know, 4, 5, 6 minutes into the match, they found their spot. They started to click. And yeah, very different, you know, and I agree with the point where usually Shayna is the badass. You know, she is the strong one. She's the one putting on a hold, putting on a move, you know, really disabling her opponent in some way, shape, or form. But we saw that on Mia's side. You know, she really, you know, found a way to, you know, that arm, like, just beat the hell out of that arm of Shayna Baszler. And, you know, and there was that moment where, is Mia going to win? I think, even though you can argue, has Shayna had it enough? Is this the time? Regardless, Shayna retained. I think Shayna Baszler still needs some more time and work in NXT. And we kind of touched on that a little bit last week, but I think Mia Yim's stock went up. You know, she was able to get it together, not let the match run away from her, and she really made a point that she's not the only, like, you know, Shayna Baszler's not the only badass in the division. Mia Yim is here, and especially, too, Mia Yim is just going to get better over time. You know that's what happens in NXT, when they're a little rusty, and or the WWE style, as we call it, or they call it. You know, I think Mia, just being so little in tenure in NXT, she's got the next year from now, we're probably having much different stories about how much better she's gotten.
All right, the last match of the night was the best 2 out of 3 falls, Adam Cole defeating Johnny Gargano. And obviously this was going to go to 3 falls. There's no denying it because of the announcement beforehand with the cage. I think that was obviously, why would you talk about that and not give everybody the Ambrose Asylum, as it clearly looked like. Yeah. So for me, like, the only issue I take is the number of false finishes, which I just took issue because, again, if you keep bringing people to the edge, they can't come down enough to get that excitement back up again. So for me, it was just, there was opportunities there to maybe not have as many. I did like how the first fall ended. I like that Johnny's like, screw it, let's go to 3 and just start clubbing him with the chair. I thought that was excellent because it was a little odd that they had like a straight up wrestling match and then a street fight. So I thought that was great. It kind of proved that Johnny was in it to win it and he was going to do it whatever it took. I was still shocked that nobody from the Undisputed Era showed up during the street fight, which was good. And then obviously you had the crazy ending of taking the dive off of the table. And I thought that was a fitting ending. That it wasn't like, in all reality, it wasn't like Adam Cole was better than Johnny on that night. He just happened to be in the right spot at the very end. They were back and forth of equal level. And I thought that was important because it doesn't make Johnny any weaker. And it, Adam Cole still keeping the title makes sense to me too, because I think he's a great champion in his current role. But yeah, to me it's just the false finishes. I don't need so many. And it, with Mauro Ranallo and the way he is, he brings you up with his voice and his passion. So sometimes it was like, okay, like I can't, eventually you just stop thinking a finish is going to happen, right? So you get too many false finishes to the point where you're like, well if it is, then it is. The only other thing I said is props to Johnny's wrestling gear. That Wolverine stuff was sick. And I thought that was really, really cool. I liked it way better than the Iron Man one he was wearing. This one was top notch. But so what did you think of the final match of the night?
So I liked it. I was a big fan of it. So number one, just to comment on a couple of things you said. You know, false finishes, the use of finishing moves and kicking out of them, that's a lost art. Not even just in WWE, in wrestling in general. AEW does it, NXT does it, WWE does it. They really got to find a way to wrap that back. They got to find a way, because it doesn't, like, a finishing move doesn't mean anything anymore. And I think they're too scared to think anyone, no matter who you are, middle card, you know, novice, you know, main, you know, top card main guys, they're too afraid to think that one move could end it all for anyone. It's almost like too many people are too afraid to look weak. But I really think that that kind of diminishes a big move, that big move to finish them all. And this could have done so much better if they eliminated these false finishes and instead insert them with just more of what they were already doing, but just make it at the end where after fighting, you know, this hardcore battle, you know, for almost an hour that they fought, you know, just make it so, oh my God, after 25, 30 minutes, he finally hit him with his finisher. And that was that cherry on, you know, cherry on the ice cream. You know, it was just, so yeah, but that was, that really took it away from me, because at no point was it, oh, is he going to get him? Because you knew, no, he's not, because they're going to kick out a bunch of times. Then also as well, yeah, right after that match, before even the match started, after Johnny Gargano came out, I tweeted Bill McKenna from Mattel, and I was like, we need a Johnny Gargano elite wrestling figure in his Wolverine outfit. I need that action figure big time. But no, overall, I thought it was great. Yeah, you know, clearly the match, you know, the first regular match, Cole ended up winning because of disqualification. It was a weird way for Johnny to look at it. You know, obviously his take was, I'm going to, you know, be opportunistic and really, you know, disable Adam, you know, give him the first fall, but then we go right into the street fight and I'll get the next one, which of course he did, you know, got the tap out in the street fight. But no, there's some really, really hard spots here. These guys, and as they always do, it's not a shock, but they beat the crap out of each other. I'm still trying to find the moment, but Adam Cole at one point took a really bad hit to the forehead, and he had a welt, like just a welt, so friggin' hard. And I think it was from one of the outside hits. But no, and man, the trust these two have in each other is absolutely fantastic. You know, because you really need to have that trust to be able to put on such aggression like they did. So obviously, you know, Gargano got into the full control. These guys had cardio for days. The kendo fights, the double super kicks we saw, you know, tornado DDT into the chair looked really, really bad. That really looked like the top of the chair back really caught the top of Adam Cole's head.
Yeah.
Poor Adam Cole, man. They both took a beating, but Adam Cole took a beating in this match. And then, no, of course, third one, the cage coming down. You know, Cole got the pin, really, and I agree with you. After really going back and forth, you know, fire extinguishers, kendo sticks, chairs, tables, the sledgehammer from the top that Gargano was able to get down, from everything else, to be able to go both up top and kind of, you know, when he grabbed that barbed wire and he was almost trying to, like, you know, choke him or utilize him in some way, but then they both fell. And I totally agree. It wasn't necessarily who was better than who. It was who was going to get the better opportunity. And Adam Cole got the better opportunity. I can talk about this match for days, but obviously I'm not going to. I loved it. I thought it was great. Once again, Gargano's stock was not hurt. Cole looked even stronger. Because as a heel, the worst type of heel is the one that can still beat you legitimately with no help from his friends. But I thought it was a great way to end off TakeOver Toronto. And I can only imagine how those guys felt the day after.
Yes, that wraps up our NXT TakeOver Toronto 2 recap. We will be back after the break to break down the SummerSlam that was. So stay tuned.
Oh, yeah. Welcome back, everyone. Took a quick little break there. Got our stuff together. Only a few seconds for you guys, but thank you for sticking with us. So now, Kyle, let's go over the big event of the weekend. On Sunday, we had SummerSlam Toronto. We'll kind of recap, yeah, each show, kind of like we did with NXT, each show, each match. But no, let's kind of just jump right into it. Jump into the pre-show. We had 4 segments on the pre-show. Leading up to it, nothing too crazy overall. Of course, we saw Drew Gulak defend his cruiserweight title against Oney Larkin. There we go. Of course, Drew retained. We had Buddy Murphy versus Apollo Crews, which kind of came up out of nowhere. Didn't see that advertised. Buddy won by disqualification as Rowan did come down and attack him. Looks like it was a little revenge from when Buddy kind of let Daniel Bryan's name come out of his mouth and Roman attacked him the other week, saying who attacked him by hitting him with the car. We had another unexpected match, a women's tag championship match with the Iconics challenging Alexa and Nikki, with Alexa and Nikki retaining the women's tag team championships. And then, of course, the big kickoff was we had Elias. Lights went out and, you know, strumming on his guitar. He's going to sing to the audience.
But of course, as a surprise guest to SummerSlam, we had the Rated R Superstar Edge from Toronto, Ontario, Canada, came out and gave him a big old spear. Crowd went wild. I thought that was a fun little, not just fun to see Edge, because it was very unexpected, but at the same time to see Edge in a, you know, in a wrestling way, you know, even though it was one move, you know, I was quite the spear, and, you know, taking a bump. We haven't seen him take a bump in quite some time. But no, that was really cool. But overall, yeah, Kyle, do you have anything specifically you wanted to highlight for the pre-show? I know there wasn't anything too crazy that happened, but...
No, because I was having technical issues with my streaming. So the sound right. would be a couple of seconds behind the video, and then all of a sudden it would be almost synced up, and then the video would pretty much restart, and then the sound became considerably faster than the ahead of the video. So we just abandoned that and sat on the couch and watched the rest of it on a tablet, or sorry, on a laptop to try and fix the streaming.
There we go. What a way to do it. All right, cool. So, but you didn't, even though there were four segments, they weren't too crazy. The Edge was the biggest one you probably missed.
Yes.
So let's kick it off the main card, which was the fourth match of the night, or the first match of the main show. The actual lineup of the overall event was a lot different than what, you know, outside of the main event, was a lot different than what we could have probably anticipated, but kicked off the main show with Becky Lynch defending her Raw Women's Championship against Natty in a submission match. Of course, we had Becky retain. I personally thought, you know, this match was a lot better than I thought it was going to be. I thought Natty looked phenomenal. You know, usually, once again, Natty is one of those individuals where I feel, you know, she's very simple in the way that she wrestles. She's a submission wrestler, but it's a lot of the same things over and over again.
She got a little bit more creative in this one, especially with detecting many different types of submissions. It was a really nice thing to see, not just a constant sharpshooter, sharpshooter, sharpshooter. But no, then she got her with the armbar. I thought it was a pretty good match to kick off the show and a really good match overall. Seems that we haven't had a long build up history with Natty, but it was good for what it was the last couple of weeks. So what do you think about?
So yeah, no, I agree. I think that was a very solid match between the both of them. You know, definitely Natty put on a better performance. She's always in a tough spot because she is one of the older wrestlers, so wrestling styles have changed, and she's trying to maintain her Hart family legacy. But, you know, I thought the outcome was the correct one. The only issue I always take is when they use each other's moves, no one's ever going to tower. No one should ever tap to their own move, because that makes it lean then that you're better at doing it than somebody else's move. And so I'm never really a big fan of that one, Montreal Screwjob aside. But for me, it was a great way to start out the show. Happy that Becky won. Super happy that we're going to get a very interesting storyline out as a result with the appearance of Sasha Banks on Monday. And I thought it was good, though, because it led from this story into that one. So I don't know if it's going to be a Becky Sasha right away, or if it'll be, you know, Natty defending her own honor first, or whatever the case may be. But I'm hoping now that we can move to a little more edgier story with Becky, if she's still going to be the man and be as stone cold like. That we get a little more edgier with what's going on with her.
Right, right. No, for sure, yeah. And if anything, all we can hope for is that Sasha Banks is now back. We saw it on Monday, cutting Natty off in the middle of a promo. My only hope is, just like I've been saying those last week and the last few weeks, I just hope that we see a proper build. You know, why is Sasha attacking Becky? Why is Sasha back? You know, let's get a little bit, you know, a lot of segments out of this. Let's get a lot of different series of matches out of this. You know, let's build a long-time storyline. And so I think a Sasha-Becky storyline can be one really, really memorable and really, really well done, if done properly. All right, next up we had the big match. Big as in there was, as we talked about last week, when it comes to Dolph Ziggler versus Goldberg, this could have went horribly, horribly bad or incredibly well. My opinion, I thought... it wasn't the outcome that I was hoping for, but I feel the purpose of this match was, we need to, because of course wrestling fans, a lot of it is, what have you done for me lately? What have you done lately? and I feel they needed to erase that last Goldberg match. Clearly, Goldberg did not hit his head when the security came and knocked on his door. There was no knock or anything. He didn't have a big old welt in the middle of his forehead. Clearly, he's learned his lesson. But no, right off the bat, Ziggler with a couple of super kicks, really hard ones right off the bat, which turned into a ginormous spear from Goldberg after kicking out of 2 to 3 super kicks. And boom, you know, right for the pin, you know, right afterwards, where you got the jackhammer. Very classic Goldberg, very quick match. I think for how short it was a classic Goldberg match. He looked great if we're looking at it in a Goldberg format. You know, overall, I think it did what it was supposed to do, and that was bring Goldberg back to a little bit more of a dominant fashion and not how weak and bad he looked in the Undertaker match not too long ago. But hey, I guess I wouldn't necessarily say good or bad. I'm indifferent, but I think I almost feel like WWE got what they wanted to accomplish out of this. What was your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I mean, props to Goldberg. He didn't botch this one. So, because obviously it didn't go longer than the minute and a half. You know, I agree that this is probably a good opportunity to erase the last match. I just don't think it should have been at Ziggler's expense.
No, not at all.
Even the two extra spears, like the first spear was vicious and the last spear was pretty good, but I don't know what that proved. And I don't know. It certainly didn't help Ziggler going forward. There could have been, you know, who should have taken the spears? Baron Corbin. That's who should have taken them. Because that would have made sense, because everyone loves to see Baron get his ass kicked. And it doesn't impact Baron, because that's his job. It's to piss off the crowd, and then the crowd gets to cheer when he gets his ass kicked. So that would have been a better suited than Dolph. Dolph kind of gets screwed, because he should be one of the top guys, and they just don't do it. So that was a big thing. I didn't really care either way about this match. With anything to do with Goldberg, I just shut my brain off and I don't want to look at it. So I was happy that it didn't last too long and we could move on to the next one.
No, fair enough. Well, welcome back, old school girl with Goldberg. And sorry, Dolph, once again, you were used as putting someone over, which really sucks, because I think Dolph deserves so much more than what he's been given the last couple of years. Then, of course, right after that, we had the United States Championship on the line. The champion, AJ Styles, defending against the man that won the gauntlet, Ricochet. We got some new gear, a different look from Ricochet. We had the one piece, the black and blue. Didn't look so bad. I like his regular gear, like his little vest and everything else more. But, hey, he wanted to go big for SummerSlam. He went big. Of course, as we kind of expected, the OC got involved. They kind of caused a little bit of disruption on the outside and definitely helped Styles on the way in. Styles did win. I thought it was a great match. Once again, these two are not going to have bad matches. You know, when you look at them, especially when you look at two high flyers, two athletic individuals, Ricochet, obviously the more creative of the two, but they were both, once again, able to complement each other very, very well. I love the Styles offense, you know, especially the kicks he was using. Into the Pele kick, everything else was fantastic. I thought it was very clean. The utilization of AJ really focusing on Ricochet's leg, knowing how much of a high flyer he is, was very good as well. Very impressive to Ricochet's point, where even going on the outside when he did the spring, you know, from the top rope, usually he uses both of his feet, and when he does that big forearm, almost like a phenomenal forearm, but Ricochet's version. Obviously, he only had one leg, and he only used one leg, which, out of that, takes incredible athleticism, if you ask me, to be able to not just lift your body up, but also spring your whole body 10 feet and in the air based off of 1 foot and one leg. I loved it. I thought it was a great match. You know, kind of what we expected from these two. You know, anything less would have been more disappointing, but I think keeping it on Styles was the smart thing, because you want to have the OC continue to kind of run wild. They're all champions. Have them as a heel, show as a united front with strength. And I don't think Ricochet needs to be pushed too hard with constantly winning championships. So seeing Ricochet on the chase, I think, is really, really good right now. But I loved it. What about you?
So I think this is where you and I will disagree. I didn't really care for the match.
Really?
Other than the ending, I've seen better from both of them separately and together. It was kind of a lull in the night for me. This was kind of the low point of the whole SummerSlam as a whole. I did like that he caught AJ caught Ricochet during his the Phoenix Splash or whatever, and put him into the Styles Clash. I was all okay for that. That made perfect sense. That was pretty impressive to be able to catch him exactly the way he needed to. But all in all, I just felt like, and I felt like the ending after the fact with the OC coming in and beating up on Ricochet again makes sense. But I've seen better matches from either one of them. So for me, this is certainly the low end of the spectrum of matches.
Interesting. Hold on, let's see what Dave Meltzer gave this.
Dave Meltzer
gave it 3 out of 5 stars.
F Dave Meltzer.
I was just curious on what he would rate him. I don't usually follow his rating system. But what else did he give? So he gave, because you know Dave's a tough cookie sometimes. But Ziggler and Goldberg, he gave it a 3 stars as well.
Exactly.
Becky and Natalya gave it a 3.25 stars. Iconics versus Alexa Bliss on the pre-show, 1 star. Buddy Murphy, he put Buddy Murphy versus Rowan in a singles match, 1.75 stars, but it was Apollo Crews, so he got that wrong. Drew Gulak versus Oney Lorcan, 2.75 stars. And then the rest we haven't gone through yet, but interesting. So funny how it's so biased. But anyways, okay, cool. No, hey. You and I are 99% of the time on the same page, but at the same time, we also do look at the same things differently sometimes, which is totally cool. All right, so obviously right after that, we had a little backstage segment with the Street Profits, you know, Ric Flair doing his thing. It was really a good way to show that Ric Flair's in the building and he's in Toronto. Then right from that, we had the SmackDown Women's Championship match, Bayley defending her championship versus Ember Moon. Bayley, the victor. I thought that was the right move, as once again, as I've talked about many, many times before, the match was okay. It was, you know, it was kind of what we slightly expected from them. Nothing over the top from either one of them. I was expecting a little bit more from Ember Moon herself, but I feel you've put the belt on Bayley. You know, be consistent with it. You know, kind of regain some of the popularity, and I guess by popularity I mean some of the, you know, some of the steam she had before, and I felt that if you took the belt off her so soon, it would have kind of diminished the run. So, kind of didn't care either which or, you know, and still or and new champion, but I felt Bayley was the right choice. What about you?
You know, I'm in agreement in terms of Bayley being the right champion between the two of them. I still think that Asuka should be the SmackDown Women's Champion. I think that makes the most sense. But you know, again, this for me, this is a match to take it or leave it. I don't, didn't really care for it. I didn't care for the story. I didn't care for the in-ring action. The only thing, thankfully, is that Bayley hit her belly-to-belly off the second rope or whatever, which I think is the only way that that should put somebody out. The notion of a on the like a regular belly-to-belly suplex, is that supposed to be strong enough? Doesn't make any sense to me. So at the least, I can accept, I'm willing to accept off the ropes as a potential finishing move, but I don't really have a lot to say because the match was just not a popcorn match, because I don't really like that term, but it was certainly a match that if I dozed off for a second or two, I wouldn't have missed anything.
For sure. It was definitely a pee break match. You can go to the washroom during this one. You didn't miss too much, but yeah, totally agree. And you know, that's a really good thing to bring up as well, where I think Bayley needs a new finisher. Big time.
She needs a submission move. I think that's the best option because she is clearly not visually strong compared to some of the other women, even compared to Ember Moon. Like, if you look at the two of them, you would think that Ember Moon was a stronger one. So, and she doesn't have the athleticism to do a high-flying move. Even her elbow drop, I don't know. If you look at her elbow drop versus Velveteen Dreams, Velveteen gets higher, jumps farther, there's more elbow. Kairi Sane has got
especially
the full...
like a Kairi Sane.
Right, but Kairi Sane's got, like, the full motion into it, right? Like,
right.
So I just feel like she needs, like, a submission move that is feasible, that would make way more sense. So whether it's a Texas Cloverleaf or an ankle lock type thing, something like that. You know, look at Kyle O'Reilly or, you know, the kind of submission moves that he puts on. Something like that, I think, is better suited than... Even if she did the Ring of... Is it called the Ring of Saturn? Rings of Saturn? The one that Neville used to do.
It's kind of like a Texas Cloverleaf. Something. Or are you meaning the one where he did the neck crank?
With the arms behind?
Oh, right. Yes. Almost like a version of... like the cripple across face.
Something.
Kind of.
I think that's better suited for her than...
No, that totally makes sense. Yeah, to see it off the second rope makes so much more sense. But yeah, I think she just needs one because you look at during the match, their normal low points of the match were so much harder and more aggressive than just lifting someone up a little bit off the ground and then just putting them on the ground. Like, that almost doesn't make as much sense as the leg drop with Hogan. The only difference is Hogan was Hogan, so you were able to kind of suspend disbelief a little differently in that sense.
Yeah.
And hence why Dave Meltzer gave it a 1.75 stars. All right, next up, we had a match that I know both of us were looking forward to. Shane McMahon versus Kevin Owens, with Kevin Owens' career on the line if he did lose. Kevin Owens did kind of attempt the week before SummerSlam to get Shane to put his career on the line. Shane, of course, was like, no. Do you think I'm that dumb? But no, I thought it was really good use of Shane not being able to be as strong on his own. And that's one of the biggest things I appreciated about this match was in other matches we've seen, like when Roman Reigns and Shane went at it, Shane looked way too strong on his own. In this one, Shane was only the strongest when Elias, as the special enforcer, was involved. And I really think that was the right way to go with this one, where it showed that the only time he can get that momentum is when, you know, he was distracting the ref, there was a low blow, a cheap shot, an eye poke. But in this case, Kevin looked very, very strong. Kevin Owens got the win. Big you can't wrestle chance from the crowd for a very long time. Obviously, Kevin Owens was tempted with the chair, you know, but then obviously the ref reminding him, you're going to get disqualified and you're going to lose your career, you know, and some good back and forth battle because you almost saw Shane look at him like, hit me with the chair, do it. And sitting there on his knees with his arms open, willing to take that chair shot and sacrifice that shot if it meant Kevin Owens losing his career. But no, obviously at the very end, you know, Elias, you know, causing a little bit of distraction. He got a low blow, a stunner, and the 1-2-3. I thought it was really, really good. What about you?
So I'm very happy with the outcome. I still think that Shane got too much offense in. His punches just, they're so short. They just feel believable. I will tell you, I super dig that shirt that he was wearing. The Fight Toronto Fight shirt, the Raptors-inspired one. Love that shirt. Unfortunately, not for sale. I think it was
not for sale. I was going to say, I looked up it online, and I was going to message you if I saw it.
Yeah, no, it looks like it's online, in arena only. But that one was money. You know, I knew that, obviously, you know, Kevin Owens was going to win. They're not going to do the quitting thing again, where when he lost with to Shane and Daniel Bryan. I thought, you know, it served its purpose. I liked that he took one stunner to finish him off. Perfect for me. When he came out on SmackDown, I got a little teary-eyed because the crowd was just really into it. And I think he finally saw that the crowd, that we appreciate what he's doing. It was annoying that then Shane is still back, still ruining things. So I just don't know what ends this feud. If that didn't end it, what is going to end this thing?
I think it almost needs to turn into, which I'm fine for continuing something if there's going to be a payoff. My hope is the payoff is Shane puts something on the line that's valuable to him, whether it be his career, his in-ring career, or something. Who knows? We can sit here and speculate exactly how it's going to go, but I think that there might be something good coming down the line that can be a good payoff for Kevin Owens, but also us as fans with seeing Shane remove himself from the situation. Mm-hmm. Who knows what that is? And I'll tell you, at one point, when Kevin Owens had the chair, a part of me thought an old school Eddie Guerrero
where I thought when the referee had his back turned talking to Elias, I thought Kevin Owens was going to slam the chair on the ground to make it sound like a hit, throw the chair towards Shane, and then drop on the ground.
Right.
That was a very, I was kind of hoping that would happen. That's very classic Eddie Guerrero. More so, like, hits his competitor with, you know, or like, sorry, not hit his, but almost looks like he's going to hit his competitor, but then hits it on the ground, drops on the ground, and then all of a sudden his opponent is holding the chair, and you see the opponent down. The referee's like, whoa, wait a minute, what did you do? You know, like a little skeezy way, but no, I thought it was great, and especially too, the stunner, one, two, three pin. Of course, as we know, the Stone Cold Stunner has probably been one of the most protected finishing moves of all time, where you didn't see Stone Cold hit five stunners on you to get you down. And I love how when Kevin Owens uses it, when it's one stunner, it's done. So they are doing something a little bit right with some of these finishing moves. So, but no, yeah, I think we're going to see some more overall. All right, up next, we had a match where I know people weren't too crazy about it, but I'll tell you. Charlotte versus Trish Stratus, the one final hoorah for Trish Stratus in Toronto. That blew expectations out of the water for me. It was so much better than I expected it. You know, Trish has proved that she still has it. You know, utilizing the figure eight on Charlotte. Everything was very, very good, especially when you look at the size difference between Charlotte and Trish. Trish, for someone who is not a regular wrestler, took a lot of really hard hits and produced a lot of clean offense in that match. That was a way to go out for me. Like, I think that night, Trish Stratus made half of the women's locker room of the current product look really, really bad. That's just my take. What was your thoughts, Kyle?
Well, you know how I feel about alumni coming back in wrestling. So, yes. I will agree, the match was better than I expected, but I was expecting complete and utter trash. So, you know, that doesn't really say much. You know, that's like a fart that doesn't smell that bad. You know, there were some moments that I was like, okay, like, this is good, this is impressive. And then other moments I'm like, yep, that's it, the problem. And in all reality, Charlotte would mop the floor with Trish Stratus even back in the day. She's bigger, she's stronger, she's faster, she's more athletic, like everything about her. And I know that you're supposed to suspend belief a bit, but I don't think you necessarily have to. I just feel like, again, this match served Trish more than it served anything else. It didn't make Charlotte look worse. It didn't make Charlotte look better. It was indifferent to Charlotte. This match was for Trish to say goodbye, potentially, yep. You know, whatever. But I just, again, there could have been a better build up to this story that would have been better than the 2 weeks or week and a half or whatever it was. I thought there could have been other shows that they could have done a little more talking about in order to build this up. And then I would have felt like, you know, the grudge match was a little more believable. But it is what it is.
Yeah, and that's where I think for me, so I understand that theory. For me, I felt it was actually a lot easier for it to be simpler, where you didn't need a whole lot of build behind it, other than pretty much Charlotte saying, listen, I don't have anything going on with SummerSlam. You're someone who calls yourself the best based off of how many title reigns you've had. How about let's go one more time? And Trish essentially saying, listen, I've done my time, convincingly taking the match and going, well, you know what? If I'm going to do this, this is going to be my last one. So Trish kind of got her little Batista moment where it was her last hurrah. You know, did the honors for Charlotte, of course, where, you know, Charlotte winning was the right thing to do. But I just loved how Trish definitely put up a fight, you know, a really good fight throughout the whole thing. So, but no, I think, hey, great, you know, great career, Trish Stratus. All right, up next, the 10th match of the evening, Randy Orton going up against Kofi Kingston for the WWE Championship. So this one was obviously the build-up for me. I knew I was very excited for because of the history that kind of led into this match. What was your thoughts, Kyle, on the whole match, the outcome, and everything else?
So I think that this failed. I think this failed us as fans. I thought they put on a solid match going in. I think they had the right build up by not putting them in the ring, like not putting them against each other up until this point. I like the background story. I like that they writ backwards, but it all still made sense to where they currently are at. It wasn't like this like secret hidden grudge that nobody's ever heard of and has no explanation for. It all was feasible, because that's what really matters to me, is it's feasible. And they're going back and forth, and I totally get it. And then there's just this weird double countout. And in fact, we had to rewind it to figure out what happened. Because we were like, did we miss something here? And then, so we had to rewind it and realize that it was a double countout. And then, for some weird reason, Kofi just goes off. And
did you not see the reason why he went off?
Well, he was doing something in front of his kids. But
yeah, he was disrespecting his family.
Yeah, but you know, I don't know. It just, it's one of those things where I would have rather Randy kick the crap out of Kofi in front of his family, and then Kofi defends, you know, his family's honor another time.
Right.
I don't like double countouts. I do not like them, because why did we bother watching? The match was, how long was the match? The match was 16 minutes. 16 minutes and 45 seconds for nothing. Because it wasn't until after the match was over that anything else was built. So, I'm struggling to figure out how Kofi fits now, because he's already hit his underdog moment. He's hit his Daniel Bryan WrestleMania, was it 30, 29, whatever it was. He already got that moment at this past WrestleMania. Everyone wanted to win, he wins. He has definitely held the belt longer than I was expecting. But I just feel like when you do a double countout, what was the point of me watching the match?
No, for sure. I see what you mean. I think, and I do agree. I think, once again, it's where I'm hesitant is where do we go from here? But yeah, I completely agree in the sense of you had the perfect build, the 10-year history on what Orton did to Kofi, you know, the struggles, the missed opportunities of that Kofi had or didn't have, and for it to turn into this, you know, it's, you know, and obviously Kofi went ham, and kind of people can appreciate, like, hey, you're disrespecting my family, I'm going to take you out. But you even saw the fans, you know, chanting bullshit, you know, like, just kind of, this is crazy. So I think, yeah, big missed opportunity, especially with two great superstars. The match itself, outside of the finish, was great. The build was great. It had everything. All you need to do was just have it be a great match. You know, just continue what you were doing. Just let Kofi trouble in paradise and pin him. You know, that's all you need to do. To really, then everyone would have cheered and go, yes, Kofi's still champion. That's great. And he got redemption from Orton 9-10 years ago. That's it. It was a very easy story they could have told, but instead you saw a little heel side from Kofi. You know, I don't know. I agree. It was a little too much for me.
Because even the segment on SmackDown didn't really make any sense either to it. And then all of a sudden we end up with a six-man tag where now, I guess, the Revival have jumped over to SmackDown, I guess, which is fine. I mean, anytime I can see the Revival, I'm for it, but again, it's just that match at SummerSlam wasn't even carried into the next show properly.
Yeah. No, so. Very true, very true. Yeah, so missed opportunity. That was probably the biggest missed opportunity on SummerSlam, I'd say. Especially after this, you only had two other matches. And then, of course, to bring up the fact that, and this fact I actually did like, we did not see Roman Reigns' attacker.
Nope.
Or anything, you know, like built from that, which I like.
I agree.
You know, it doesn't always need to be SummerSlam's here, you know, here you go, you know, this means that that's the end, or we find out. Let us wait a little longer. You know, if anything, when you looked on Twitter online afterwards, everyone was not mad at it, but they wanted more of it. They were like, oh, please tell me this show is going to end with Roman Reigns discovering his attacker. You know, it's, and if anything, by doing that, no one can ever say that WWE is favoring Roman Reigns over anyone these days.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he obviously had his battle. He's back. They haven't been crunching him into the opportunity. The only opportunity he potentially had at a title shot was the grunge match a couple of weeks ago when Seth Rollins won for the opportunity against Brock that night. But no, I thought overall they're handling Roman Reigns really well, because let's be honest, we all know this, and especially the people that love Roman or hate Roman, we all know Roman's the man. We all know he's the future, but we don't need to highlight that over too much. You know, let him build himself back up there. Wait until the fans want him back into that spot, and then put him, because the fans will want him in that spot at some point in the future. So, all right, next up, we had a big match I know we were all waiting for. We had Finn Balor, looks like his last match for a little bit, taking on Bray Wyatt the Fiend. I had so many notes on this. I'm going to shorten them up. I'm really excited, Kyle, to see what you thought about all of this. We had a new theme song with the same lyrics. You know, it was the exact same type of song, but with a different vibe. You were right. He fought with the mask on, which I didn't think would have been done very well, but it was. The old Bray Wyatt head as the lantern was super freaky, and I loved it. The neck breaker was probably the only thing I could have done without. But I do like how Finn sold it, where it wasn't like they acted like they broke his neck. You know, the Fiend struggled in his head. You know, coup de grace to mandible claw. Oh my God. Like, Corey did a really good job comparing him to The Undertaker, but not overly comparing him to The Undertaker. Crowd was happy. I was happy. Kyle, what did you think?
So, like I tweeted right after, this was my favorite part of the entire evening.
100%.
At first, I was a little concerned because the crowd was behind him, and I noticed the lyrics right away, and I was like, okay, so maybe we're just gonna get old Bray, and they had the lantern, and then I noticed, like, oh, wait a minute, that's not him. That's a face wrapped around the lantern, and he kept the mask on, and he looked fantastic in the ring. He was dominant. Everything, like the snapping of the neck thing was. That was intense, and I actually thought that's how the match was going to end, and I thought, yeah. Ooh, very, very Lucha Underground. It wouldn't have made sense, obviously, and I don't know if they could have done something else instead, but I liked the brutality of it. The one thing overall, and I love the fact that it opened with the Firefly little intro, but the only thing I would like to see is more of a separation between the Yowie Wowie kid-loving Bray Wyatt on the TV and the Fiend. I would love to see more of that internal struggle between him that we see a little bit in the match. But I was also concerned that how the mask was going to work if he kept it on. But it was short, and it was impactful, and it was like, yes, this is what we've been waiting for. There's been enough build-up with Bray, and I am all for this Fiend. I am so hoping that they don't screw this up, because I think this could be Mankind when he first came to WWE. In this, right, like, otherworldly creature, and nobody really knows what story is, but he is spooky and creepy, and he's winning, and he's doing damage. But I want Bray... I don't want Bray to sit there in squash matches. I want him to continue destroying legends. If they come in for a surprise, do it. Continue, like, beat up on Zack Ryder, beat up on Curt Hawkins, beat up on, well, can't Jinder Mahal because he's injured, No Way Jose, like, all of those guys that are there to help fill the roster out, just start beating those guys and do it like squash matches, because... But it's got to be as brutal. That's the big thing. It has to stay edgy, and it has to stay dark, and it has to really push the boundaries of what we've seen before. If the Fiend is going to move to Fox to be edgier, you've got to keep him edgy. You cannot let up, and he cannot get into a normal wrestling match.
No, 100% agree. No, yeah, absolutely agree. You know, with this, you know, the 3 minutes and 25 seconds was perfect, because if anything, it felt longer, because you were paying attention to so much more in the ring. and I loved it. I thought, and I agree with that. Actually, I like that point that you mentioned too, and I would love to see that, where, you know, when we're watching the Firefly Funhouse, almost make it seem like we're getting closer to the end of the Firefly Funhouse, where it's almost like Bray doesn't want to be here anymore. You know, he's no longer contained the Fiend. And if anything, turn it into, when we're watching backstage segments with Bray, it's in Fiend form, but in a really dark place. You know, like, I think they hit everything. Finn did a great job selling for Bray. You know, he really took one on the chin for this one. But what's great is, we know Finn's going away for a couple months. He'll come back. The fans will be in love with him again. Everyone loves, you know, Finn Balor. But I thought, if we could have packaged the perfect way to debut the Fiend, this was it. I loved it. Loved it. And once again, Mattel, make this action figure. I'm really excited.
I will note, it has already been announced that the Fiend will be in WWE 2K20 in one of the DLCs.
Yes, I did see that.
So that's exciting.
Yeah, very, very exciting. All right, next up, last one, close to wrapping up this episode. SummerSlam's main event, this one obviously being the challenger Seth Rollins coming up against the beast Brock Lesnar, the reigning defending undisputed Universal Champion. Before I go into some of my notes, I'm really interested to see how you felt about this one, because I know you have some mixed feelings about Brock Lesnar, you know, in himself. I know you had some big reservations about this match. What did you think, Kyle? I'm really excited.
So I actually I enjoyed it, and it's the Brock Lesnar that I like, where he's brutal and but still vulnerable. And I mean, I could have done, I'm a little over the Rocky Balboa Seth Rollins or Becky Balboa in that way, but you know, I certainly would have. I'm very okay with the ending. I will tell you again, Paul Heyman, fantastic job of selling what he needs to sell when he needs to sell it. I thought that was great. When Brock whipped Seth around by the tape, like, those are the things that I appreciate, because even though, yes, I'm sure he doesn't actually have broken ribs, but that still can't feel good.
No.
Right? Regardless of whether it's make-believe or not, that's the thing that I can appreciate on both sides, when somebody's willing to put themselves through that. And it's not like they're going to take a nosedive off the top of a cage onto a concrete block, right? Like, they're not putting themselves in, like, deathly risk, but that can't feel good, and they're willing to do it. And so, all in all, I thought this was a good match. I did enjoy it. I'm over now the Seth Rollins and Brock. I want to see Brock do something else. It's going to be tough because Paul Heyman is running Raw. The one thing I will say, I appreciate champions like Seth Rollins. I think you can do more with people of Seth Rollins' style and size than you can with Brock Lesnar's. We can get more creative matches. We can get better matches. Throw AJ Styles in there. Throw Finn Balor in there. You know, those guys, you can be a lot. Even I will even say that I think Drew McIntyre is at the top in terms of size of the biggest guy that you probably want as your champion, because you can do so much with them, and anything is possible. It doesn't have to be like, oh, Seth Rollins has to climb the tallest mountain while, you know, pushing a big boulder up the hill in order to win. Like, doesn't have to be like that all the time. So I'm happy that Seth is champion. I want to move on from the Brock Lesnar. I want to see what they're going to do. Do we get AJ Seth? I'm all for that. But I feel like then you got to give up the U.S. title, and I don't know how you would do that effectively. But all in all, this was definitely better than I was expecting. It's nice to see, you know, Brock Lesnar, a 13-minute match. Like, that says something. Also crazy, though, the longest match on this card was 16 minutes and 45 seconds.
Yeah.
Overall, this was a perfect length of a pay-per-view. You got, not counting the two-hour pre-show, it was done by like 10:30, and you still got, you know, what they ended up with, 9 matches? Perfect.
12 matches.
Perfect. Perfect, perfect. I do not need a 6-hour pay-per-view. Everybody got enough time to tell their story. Nobody got shortcutted. And at the same time, none of the matches realistically dragged on.
No, so true. You know, and I'm glad you hit on that point, because that was one of my points that I wanted to hit as well. And if anything, too, there was a lot of hypocrites online afterwards saying, oh, it's not even 11 o'clock yet. Is that it? You know, like, come on, guys. We've been asking for them to still put on long shows, but not as long as a shift at work. But no, this is great. It was great to see a long Brock match. 13 minutes and 25 seconds was right on the money. It was a very mixed crowd, very pro-Brock, but also very pro-Seth Rollins. This, when I talk about build and storylines, I talk about it every single week. This is what I'm talking about. This has been building since the Royal Rumble. Seth won the Rumble. You know, Brock told Seth he was going to be the one to challenge him, which showed the balls that Brock had. You had the back and forth all the way to WrestleMania. You had the short match at Mania, which showed that Seth Rollins was opportunistic. You had Brock find his way back to the championship. Brock having so much more TV time. Seth battling his way through the Gauntlet match to become the number one contender. Week after week, Brock was beating the crap out of Seth, not just in a normal, I'm going to come in and F5 you, more like F5s on chairs, pulling him out of ambulances. This whole storyline is a perfect example of what I talk about when I talk about Edge and John Cena, Randy Orton and Triple H. You know, when we talk about all those great storylines, they lasted for several months. You know, the Royal Rumble was in, you know, January. So February, March, April, May, June, July. This was a seven-month build-up. And we know it's the end because on Raw, Paul Heyman came out saying that he doesn't want another match with Seth Rollins because this is ridiculous. So we kind of know it seemingly is a pause on everything, but this is perfect. A several-month promo, back and forth. They exchanged the title once or twice amongst each other. Seth Rollins, if he wasn't on top of the mountain at the Royal Rumble and at WrestleMania, out of all of this, being able to overcome Brock Lesnar and legitimately beat Brock Lesnar, as of right now in my eyes, Seth Rollins, amongst anyone in the roster, is the man to beat. Because you saw Brock Lesnar is the man to beat each and every night, each and every week, each and every month, each and every match. Seth has dominated him twice this year. Beat him at Mania, beat him at SummerSlam, the two biggest pay-per-views, beat him convincingly. You're totally right. The throwing with the tape, oh my God, like that was absolutely, like I was literally, like you even saw Seth's face when he's spinning him around and that little piece of tape is rolled up and it's just holding him by the side of his rib. Like, it was hard. Clearly, Seth looked at Brock in the back and was probably like, beat the shit out of me. Come at me. Let's go. And that's the type of match Brock Lesnar loves. A beat-em-up style wrestling match. This was a pro wrestling match, and I loved it. Great way to finish off the pay-per-view. Seth Rollins looks like a star. We did get Seth and AJ afterwards, a little bit on Raw. Not so much. It turned into something else. But overall, I thought SummerSlam, it was a great kickoff. It was a great end. A little bit of hiccups and some opportunities, you know, within. But I thought overall the show was great. Anything else from you, Kyle?
Nope. That is it. You've summed it up very well.
All right, cool. All right, so let's take a quick little break, get a little refreshment, and then let's finish off the show with capping off a little bit of tomorrow's C4 event and a couple of closing statements.
Sounds good. We'll be right back.
All right, right back, guys.
And we have returned from our long, long break. Thank you so much for continuing to join us. We just wanted to close out the show talking about the Fighting Back 9 C4 Wrestling show coming up tomorrow, August the 16th. It is sold out. One thing I do want to note, unfortunately, there are a bunch of dirtbags out there in the world who are trying to sell online tickets to people who want to make the show. It has been repeated over and over again. There are no tickets online. All tickets are physical. So if you are looking at buying them online and someone offers you the link to their online ticket, or they offer you to print off the tickets, those do not exist. So please save yourself the troubles. just ignore it. Unfortunately, you know, at this point, there probably won't be any other opportunities to get tickets. I don't think anybody's going to sell there. So just keep that in mind. It's unfortunate that people have to take a good cause and shit all over it. So I just wanted to break down. So we do have the New Legacy Inc. presenting the over-the-top Battle Royal. Names that have been announced so far is Dino Benjamin, Rahim Ali, the best tag team, Spunk and Logan, who have one of the best opening theme songs. They do love theirs. Tara Calloway, Nick Sullivan, Brad Alexis, who's part of the Montreal Elite, Tom Fulton. Then we got the usual MVP and Buffalo's own Puff, along with some guy named Animal Bob Anger, who is wearing some funky mask. Green Phantom will be there. Sheldon Jean will be there. Jody Threat, who did have a tryout at the in Toronto for WWE. Kevin Blackwood, one of the Buffalo Brothers. PCP Effin' Manny will be making his return. What else we got? Donovan Danhausen, who showed up at last event, which was very interesting. Tony Deppen, who I think we've seen before. The first time I saw Sunny Kiss, so that should be good. Daniel Garcia, who is signed to appear in Evolve. I didn't realize that Danny's only been wrestling for like 2.5 years, so he's done quite a while for himself. Von Vertigo and Gabriel Fuerza, Fight or Flight. Jonathan Rukin, Sexy Eddie, and Stu Grayson are the ones that have been announced so far. That's 3, 4, 8, 12, 16, 20, 24. So there's still some more guys to be announced or surprised, so we'll be interested to see what happens there. And this is a really good mixture of talent that are coming from some of the other local promotions, so it's nice to see that we get some people that we don't necessarily normally get to see. So we have the Loot 07 Championship, Benjamin Tull taking on Sally. Familiar with Benjamin Tull, not familiar with Sally, so that'll be interesting. One of the ones I'm really looking forward to is actually two of the classmates of the individual who this is kind of started off for. So we have Shane Simmons and Zach Manson, who I don't think, you know, are necessarily in the wrestling business per se now. So we'll get to see them in action. So I think that'll be really special for especially a lot of people that have been around C4 for quite a while. Then we have a Sea Valley Wrestling. I think it's what it's called. Oh, sorry. Seaway Valley Wrestling Showcase Match, which is a Four Corners match. One of my favorites, the Scrapper James Stone. Ryan Donovan, who's been around everywhere and locally. Junior Benito, who I think is going to be really good. He's a very, very young kid. Once he kind of fills out, gets some meat on him, gets some muscle behind him, I think he's gonna do very well. And some guy named Little Blay, never heard of that guy, so that one should be a bit of a laugher if he's as goofy as he looks. And then we also have the Le Lutte Civre Championship. I'm not too sure what that's all about, but it's Lefisto's back against the Beast King FTM. And then there are two main matches. So we have Evil Uno partnering with the Butcher of the Blade to take on Joey Janela with Kobe Durst and Matt Angel. It has been announced that this will be Joey's last match in Ottawa for quite some time. Likely the same for Evil Uno and Stu Grayson. And then we have our main event, Cody and MJF taking on TDT. So that'll be an interesting one too. I mean, I've seen Cody on the cruise ship. Not too sure how he fares in these very physical matches that TDT always bring. So I think that's going to be good. This is really the reason why it was sold out. And again, Cody is selling tickets for VIP only, silver and gold, to meet and greet. You get a picture, you get an autograph, and then you get a picture with your own camera, and everything goes towards the cause. Cody's not taking a dime from it, which is a stand-up offer. And to keep in mind, for those that are VIP, the doors open at 6 and the opening VIP show starts at 6:30. So while the regular show starts later, if you're VIP, make sure you get there in time so you don't miss out on extra content. On top of that, they have a fantastic auction. They've already posted some pictures around of some artwork being done, some of the doors and other things that were being offered from the previous shows, as well as the guy who does the artwork, did an artwork on one of the doors, so they're going to sell that. And I saw a picture from a source of mine, which a bunch of autographed pictures. So I think this is obviously going to be the biggest show they've had for the charity, but it might be one of the biggest shows they've ever had. So I'm excited to see what happens. I will be sure to provide my feedback and recap next week on how this goes, but this will be one to remember. And don't forget that you will be able to watch this at some point in time on Independent Wrestling. C4 Wrestling is a sponsored promo. It's, I think, C4 Wrestling, and you get 20 days on Independent Wrestling TV for free.
All right. There we go. That's the way you break it down.
There you go. So was there anything that else that kind of you wanted to bring to everybody's attention?
No, I think that's it. I think we did a pretty good job breaking down NXT, SummerSlam weekend. Talked a little bit about a couple of things from Monday and SmackDown. But no, today's episode was really to be dedicated to the SummerSlam weekend and the great job the boys and girls did at NXT and SummerSlam. But no, hey, that's it for us. Unless, Kyle, you have anything else you want to talk about?
I got nada.
All right, cool. Well, thank you so much, everyone. I hope you have a great night. Remember to subscribe and check us out on social media at 613 Wrestling Podcast on Instagram, YouTube, Twitter. We're all over the place on your podcast apps, Anchor, Spotify, Google, everywhere. Give us a download. Give us a follow. We appreciate all of your love and support, and we will talk to you guys next week.
Sounds great. Thanks very much, guys.
Take care.
Six, one, three, wrestling.